beard, maybe looks kinda weird, and if you ever see him, he can give you quite a shock. Now people, let me tell you about last year when the dude came flying over here. Well, the hawk was out, snow's on the ground, folks stayed in to party down. The beat was thumping on the box, and I was dancing in my socks, and the drummer played at a solid pace, and the taste of the bass was in my face. And the guitar player laid down a heavy layer of the funky chunky rhythm of the disco beat. And the guy with the 88 started to participate, and I could sure appreciate it sound so sweet. We were all in the mood, so we had a little food and a joke and a smoke and a little bit of wine, when I thought I heard a hoop on the top of the roof. Could it be it wasn't me? I was feeling super fine, so I went to the attic where I thought I heard the static, on a chance that the fans was somebody breaking in. But the noise on the top was a reindeer drop, just a trick, same thing, and I let the sucker in. Holy moly, you got a lot of wishes on your chinny chin chin. He allowed, he was proud of the hairy little crowd on the point of the door where the skin should have been. Gets cool for a fool, going out every you for a day on the sleigh when the cold winds blow. So the beer may be weird, but I'll never have a cheer, cause it's warm in the storm when it's down below. I said, yo God, it's cold tonight, but can you stop for a drop before you go? He said, why not, if the music's hot and our chance of dance beneath the mistletoe. So he went downstairs and forgot his scares, and he rocked the spot and danced like a pro. And every young girl tried to rock his world, but he booked the yogi yogi till he had to go. And before he went, this fine old gent bought a gift with a sip through his big red bag. In the top or the bottom, he reached in and got him toys for the boys, for the girl's glad rag. And the grown-ups got some presents too, a new TV and a stereo. A new Seville, about as blue as the sky, the best that money couldn't buy. Cause money could never ever buy the feeling, the one that comes from not concealing the way you feel about your friends. And this is how the story ends. The dude in red's back at the pole up north where everything is cold. But if he were right here tonight, he'd say Merry Christmas and to all a good night.
I've indulged in high knowledge to scan of encyclopedia, keeping constant research of our reports and news media. Kids starving in Ethiopia, and we are getting greedier. The rich are getting richer, and the needy's getting needier.
This is Otis M. Carson. I'm from NYC, and you're listening to WGXC, Acra, Hudson, Catskill.
Wave Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wave Farm and WGXC operate and broadcast. The Mohicans name themselves the people of the waters that are never still, following their arrival along the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations and in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For more information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge-Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit Mohican.com.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, featuring first-run and repertory films at movie theaters located in Rhinebeck and Saugerties, as well as live music, filmmaker conversations, staged readings, community events, variety shows, magic, comedy, and more. The Hudson Valley Picture Show traveling series brings cinema to locations around the region. The latest schedules, as well as upcoming pop-up events at the Community Theater in Catskill, can be found at upstatefilms.org.
I was just going to lie down for 5 minutes, take a little nap.
Yeah, a regular Rip Van Winkle.
Who?
Another guy who took a little nap, woke up, and didn't know where he was.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books, youth radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, and beyond. Listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Yada. I'm 13, starting to think about applying to college. Woo. And I live in Florida.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate, and bookish things.
And that's what we're going to do today. We're often joined by our friends Fatia, Adelia, mother friends sometimes. But today it is the Jada and Emily show.
Hooray!
So we're going to talk about some books and stuff. I don't know. At least
Mom
books.
Mom usually tells me don't make it the Jada show, but now I have the perfect chance to make it the Jada show.
Yep. Nothing wrong with that. So what should we talk about first on the Jada show?
Books, of course.
Oh, what a great idea. Do you want to start us off?
I recently been digging back into the lists and lists and lists of books that I've been reading. As in digging into the lists and lists of books I've been reading over and over again because I have no other choice. And I found the book by Jerry Spinelli, Loser, which I really like. So I'll just read the back of it because I happen to have one today. There's not really a back of it, but I'll just read for you a paragraph from it. You grow up with a kid, but you never really notice him. He's just there, on the street, on the playground, the neighborhood. He's part of the scenery, like the parked cars and the green plastic cans on trash day. You pass through school, first grade, second grade, there he is going along with you. You're not friends, you're not enemies. You just cross paths now and then. Maybe at the park playground, one day you look up and there he is, the other end of the seesaw, or it's winter and you slide to the bottom of Half Pig Hill and you're charging back up and there he goes zipping down, his arms out like a swan diver, screaming his head off. And maybe it annoys you that he seems to be having even more fun than you, but it's a 1 second thought and it's over. You don't even know his name. And then one day you do. You hear someone say a name and somehow you know that's who the name belongs to. It's that kid, Zinkoff. That was the first chapter of this book, and that's the general writing style of Jerry Spinelli. I really like him, and I like this book in particular. I like the premise, and I feel that it's a generally very, a good book. There's a lot of interesting stories and, like, little plot, and the plot is very interesting. It's just, following the basic outline of the plot is just following a kid growing up. But the actual stuff that happens along the way is really what makes the story charming. So I'd really recommend this book to basically anyone. It's funny and it's also, just a book that's nice to read again after a while.
And you said you've read other books by Spinelli that you'd like to?
Yeah, but this is my favorite.
I think I've only read that Maniac McGee. Is that by him?
I think so. I read that one too. I liked it. I just like this one a lot.
Yeah. That was it. So what you read was the first chapter?
Yes.
That's cool. I liked the style of it. It was, it was interesting.
That's generally his style. More of the writing is like that in the book. So yeah.
Is the story told from one character's point of view?
No, it's, it is. It's third person.
So it's like from omniscient narrator.
Yeah, but mainly it focuses on the main character. So it's a very interesting way of writing.
And is the title Loser, is that like a part of the story? Like either name calling?
Yeah, it comes in right about halfway the story, I think.
I forget when that book was written. I'm curious if it feels like it was maybe an older book. I don't know, it's 2002. So that's not, that is older for, you weren't born yet, but I thought it may have been older than that.
Yeah, it's relatively recent for a lot of the books. Like, there are a bunch of kids books coming out now, but a lot of books that I think are really good are usually the ones that came out you know, early 2000s, late 1900s. I just feel like that's a really good age for, you know, young children's books. And I still have those because that's what I was only a few years ago, and that's what my sister's reading. So we still have those books around the house, and it's nice to read them sometimes.
Yeah, there's some of the like older classics, like books that were even out when I was a kid. Sometimes I reread them as an adult, and I'm like, this holds up. This is good. And then part of me doesn't know if it's just nostalgia or like, you know, would it work for kids your age or younger? But I read a lot. Well, both of you read some of them and share them. And then my niece also has been reading a lot of sort of like what are classics at this point that were out when I was younger. And she really likes them too. So they do hold up for like a young audience of today. That's fun. But the book I wanted to share today is not an old book. It is, when did it come out? It came out in 2019. And it's a book written for teens. It's called The Fountains of Silence by Ruta Sepetys, and it's a work of historical fiction. This is the first book I think I've read by her, although she's been on my radar for a long time. She writes a lot of historical fiction and has gotten rave reviews for her books. And I picked up this one because I'm going on a trip to Spain soon, and I always like to read books based in the places where I'm traveling, if I can. Can't always do it. Some places don't have as many books written about them. And actually, it wasn't that easy to find many set in at least the places in Spain that I'm going. But I found this one, and I was like, great, because I've always wanted to read her. So it's a good fit. But the book's called The Fountains of Silence, and it is set primarily in like the 1950s, late 1950s, and then at one point it skips ahead in time. I forget how many years, but probably around 20 years into the future. But I'll read the description for this. A portrait of love, silence, and secrets under a Spanish dictatorship. Madrid, 1957. Under the fascist dictatorship of General Francisco Franco, Spain is hiding a dark secret. Meanwhile, tourists and foreign businessmen flood into Spain under the welcoming promise of sunshine and wine. Among them is 18-year-old Daniel Matheson, the son of an oil tycoon who arrives in Madrid with his parents hoping to connect with the country of his mother's birth through the lens of his camera. Photography and fate introduce him to Anna, whose family's interweaving obstacles reveal the lingering grasp of the Spanish Civil War, as well as chilling definitions of fortune and fear. Daniel's photographs leave him with uncomfortable questions amidst shadows of danger. He is backed into a corner of difficult decisions to protect those he loves. Lives and hearts collide, revealing an incredibly dark side to the sunny Spanish city. And it has a note here that it includes vintage media reports, oral history commentary, photos, and more. So now I have to get the physical book because I didn't realize there were photos. I listened to the audiobook for this one, and they do have like interspersed throughout little bits from oral histories that are sort of read in a different style, which I thought was cool. But yeah, I thought it was an interesting story. Like I learned a little bit about history and what life was like during that time. I really liked the main characters. The description really focuses in on Daniel, who's the photographer. The teenage photographer, and he is a really interesting character, and the author I think focused on him a bit because she is an outsider to Spain, like she's not Spanish, and so she felt like having like an outside perspective as the main perspective felt right to her. But it also centers on Anna and some of her family members, and so while a lot of the story focuses on Daniel and his part of the story, there's also moments where it sort of skips away from him and goes to see what Anna's sister Joanna's doing, or her brother, or her cousin. But Daniel and Anna meet at the hotel where he's staying. She's working, doing sort of helping out with the clients at the hotel, so doing room service type of work and other errands and things like that for the guests. And it's a hotel that primarily has foreign clientele, primarily American. And so, yeah, Daniel comes with his family, and there's some stuff going on with his mom and dad that he doesn't quite know about and starts to get suspicious about. And then he is also really interested in taking photographs, and there's a photo competition that he wants to enter that he's hoping if he wins that he'll be able to go to school, to journalism school, to study photography and photojournalism, because that's his dream. And his parents really want him to become an engineer and follow in his dad's footsteps in the oil business. They just think it's more reasonable or realistic of a goal. So it's interesting. I'm curious what the photos that are included in the book are, because I wonder if they're supposed to look like the photos that he's taking, or if they're just photos that show what it looked like at that time. But I think they do a good job of painting a picture of what the photos look like that he's taking, and the other scenes as well. But yeah, it was a really cool book. Highly suggest it for people interested in historic fiction. And I think it's interesting. It's an interesting setting that I think a lot of people don't learn about. So nice to get a little lesson in there.
Yeah, it does sound very interesting. I'll have to look it up.
Yeah. Yes, now I have to figure out what my next book is. I have some other Spain books as well that I have checked out. I have one adult book and I have two, I think they're middle grade books. I can't decide which one to read. Maybe I'll listen to a chapter of each one, see what draws me in. Yeah, that's my book for this week, Fountains of Silence by Rudis Cepedes. I'm not sure if I'm saying her name right. I tried to make a note of it when there was like at the end of the audiobook, there was she talked for a little bit and she said her name. And I was like, I have to remember how to say it. And then I immediately forgot. but I think it might be Cepedes. It's Cepetys.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That makes sense.
Then again, there are words that sound the exact opposite of what they look like. So
that's true. Or like my last name is spelled different than it is pronounced, or what you would assume if you just saw the name is probably not how it's pronounced. People say my name wrong all the time, but I don't mind. So now that we've shared our book selections for the week, we thought we'd share some winter poems with our dear listeners. So we found some poems over at poets.org. There are poems for kids section on winter poems, and there's so many good ones. It's hard to choose. Do you want to get us started, Jada?
This isn't really a winter poem, but I think it fits the idea, because winter is sort of, you know, the cold and flu season. So I chose the poem Sick by Shel Silverstein. It's one of my favorites. It's very funny. I cannot go to school today, said little Peggy Ann McKay. I have the measles and the mumps, a gash, a rash of purple bumps. My mouth is wet, my throat is dry, I'm going blind in my right eye. My tonsils are as big as rocks, I've counted 16 chicken pox, and there's one more, that's 17. And don't you think my face looks green? My leg is cut, my eyes are blue, it must be instamatic flu. I cough and sneeze and gasp and choke, I'm sure that my left leg is broke. My hip hurts when I move my chin. My belly button's caving in. My back is wrenched. My ankle's sprained. My appendix pains each time it rains. My nose is cold. My toes are numb. I have a sliver in my thumb. My neck is stiff. My voice is weak. I hardly whisper when I speak. My tongue is filling up my mouth. I think my hair is falling out. My elbow's bent. My spine straight, my temperature is 108. My brain is shrunk, I cannot hear, there is a hole inside my ear. I have a hangnail and my heart is, what's that? What's that you say? You say today is Saturday? Goodbye, I'm going out to play. I just love Shel Silverstein. I think that he's a very great writer.
Yeah, he's really fun.
It feels like that every time you go out in cold.
Yeah, I'm glad that they're feeling okay to go outside and play. It's no fun being sick at all. But it's really not fun being sick when it's playtime.
I think they're pretending.
Yeah, I know. I like the part where they say their belly button's caving in.
It's already caved in.
Unless you're an Audi, and then it might be pretty disturbing if your belly button starts caving in.
I'm just going to guess that he meant that she was an innie, because yeah. It makes it even more funny.
Yeah, that's what I was assuming, which is why I like it. But so I'm going to read a less funny poem, because it's not Shel Silverstein. But it's a poem called Snow, which we haven't had much of yet, but I hope we get it because I love snow. And this is by Naomi Shihab Nye. Once with my scarf knotted over my mouth, I lumbered into a storm of snow up the long hill and did not know where I was going except to the top of it. In those days, we went out like that. Even children went out like that. Someone was crying hard at home again, raging blizzard of sobs. I dragged the sled by its rope, which we normally did not do when snow was coming down so hard, pulling my brother, whom I called by our secret name, as if we could be other people under the skin. The snow bit into my face, prickling the rim of the head where the hairs start coming out, and it was a big one. It would come down and down for days. People would dig their cars out like potatoes. "How are you doing back there?" I shouted, and he said, "Fine, I'm doing fine," in the sunniest voice he could muster, and I think I should love him more today for having used it. At the top, we turned, and he slid down, steering himself with the rope gripped in his mittened hands. I stumbled behind, sinking deeply, shouting, "Ho, look at him go," as if we were having a good time. Alone on the hill, that was the deepest I ever went into the snow. Now I think of it when I stare at paper or into silences between human beings, the drifting accumulation. A father goes months without speaking to his son. How there can be a place so cold any movement saves you. Ho, you bang your hands together, stomp your feet. The father could die, the son, before the weather changes. That was a lot different than I first thought when it started out.
I thought definitely. I liked how it changed. I liked how it was a very interesting poem.
I'll read another one. This one is called, this is a short one. This author writes a lot of short poems, I found. It's called Winter Trees, and it's by William Carlos Williams. All the complicated details of the attiring and the disattiring are completed. A liquid moon moves gently among the long branches. Thus, having prepared their buds against a sure winter, the wise trees stand sleeping in the cold. I like thinking about the attiring and disattiring of a tree.
That's a nice way to put it.
Here's another one by the same poet called that also talks about trees a little bit. Approach of Winter is the name of the poem by William Carlos Williams. The half-stripped trees, struck by a wind together, bending all, the leaves flutter dryly, and refuse to let go, or driven like hail, stream bitterly out to one side and fall where the salvia's hard carmine, like no leaf that ever was, edged the bare garden. I haven't read all of this poet's poems, but everyone I've read is short and sweet. Nothing wrong with that. So many poems. Here, I'll do one more. This is called Grace by Joy Harjo. Oh, this one's really long. I think we can handle it. Okay, so it's got a dedication for Darlene Wind and James Welch. I think of Wind and her wild ways, the year we had nothing to lose and lost it anyway in the cursed country of the fox. We still talk about that winter, how the cold froze imaginary buffalo on the stuffed horizons of snowbanks. The haunting voices of the starved and mutilated broke fences crashed our thermostat dreams, and we couldn't stand it one more time. So once again, we lost a winter in stubborn memory, walked through cheap apartment walls, skated through fields of ghosts into a town that never wanted us in the epic search for grace. Like coyote, like rabbit, we could not contain our terror and clowned our way through a season of false midnights. We had to swallow that town with laughter so it would go down easy as honey. And one morning, as the sun struggled to break ice and our dreams had found us with coffee and pancakes in a truck stop, along Highway 80, we found Grace. I could say Grace was a woman with time on her hands, or a white buffalo escaped from memory, but in that dingy light, it was a promise of balance. We once again understood the talk of animals, and spring was lean and hungry with the hope of children and corn. I would like to say, with grace, we picked ourselves up and walked into the spring thaw. We didn't. The next season was worse. You went home to Leech Lake to work with the tribe, and I went south. And wind, I am still crazy. I know there is something larger than the memory of dispossessed people. We have seen it. That was Grace by Joy Harjo, and it's from In Mad Love and War. Do you have another one?
I can't find any ones that I like. Those don't seem interesting to me.
What about, where is it? There's one called Snow Song. I kind of like that one.
This is not my kind of poem.
Oh, here. So while Jade is looking for another one to read, I will read one that I found that I liked that Jada did not like. So this is Snow Song by Frank Dempster Sherman. Over valley, over hill, hark, the shepherd piping shrill, driving all the white flocks forth from the far folds of the north. Blow, wind, blow, weird melodies you play, following your flocks that go across the world today. How they hurry, how they crowd, when they hear the music loud. Grove and lane and meadow full, sparkle with their shining wool. Blow, wind, blow, until the forests ring. Teach the eaves the tunes you know, and make the chimney sing. Hither, thither, up and down, every highway of the town, huddling close, the white flocks all gather at the shepherd's call. Blow, wind, blow, upon your pipes of joy, all your sheep, the flakes of snow, and you, their shepherd boy. Whee! I thought that one was fun. I also like, I like anytime somebody says hither, thither, because that's pretty nice.
not my
hither,
kind of stuff.
Thither. I never say hither, thither. I should start saying that more often. People would think I was really cool.
Or really a poetry nerd.
Yep. Poetry nerd. I don't know if I'd go that far. I do like poetry, but I don't think
you're
I'm a poetry
the
nerd.
Literal director of a library. It's kind of hard to not like all kinds. Like, poetry comes up a lot when you think in writing in general. Because people don't want to write a full book sometimes, so they just go with poetry.
I like to read collections of poems sometimes, like a poet will put out a book collecting a bunch of poems, and I like reading them. Let's say I don't always understand every poem, or they don't all speak to me, and I don't work that hard to figure them out. In those cases, I just read the collection and let what does work for me, and what doesn't, doesn't. And that's great. I feel like I could read a whole book and maybe just a couple of poems stand out, but that's fine. Do you find anything else you want to read?
I'm looking. This is hard. So hard. I sort poems into two categories. The ones that are fun to read in my head and the ones that are fun to read aloud. I don't know why I'm fussy about stuff like this. I just don't like more simple poems. I write my own poems with nothing sometimes, but nothing that's very winter related.
Do you have a favorite poem that you've written that you'd like to share?
I have a series of haikus, or three of them. I was trying to write them. I don't want to. Just let me make sure that they're. Can you read it?
Read what?
Can you read
your
poems?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. These are some haikus by Jada that I'm reading for the first time. The great oak will bend, swaying gently, it does sigh. How happy am I? Oak has a cousin looking jealously at it, wishing to be grand. Oak smiles kindly. Do not twist your branches, dear. Oak is always right.
I wrote them for a writing competition. The prompt was I chose them haiku, any emotion, and the theme had to be oak. So I wrote three of them.
I like it. I like it as a little collection of haikus about oak. Very cool.
It took me a while to figure it out, though, because I'm not very good with sort of structured poems. Uh-huh. Like, I can, but usually it's just the simple rhyming pattern. I haven't really tried haikus that much, so I'm glad I got to do this.
I really like haikus. I think I like the how much can be conveyed in, like, a short amount of writing. I saw some cool ones over the summer. I went to a Hokusai exhibit, who was an amazing artist from Japan. did a lot of printmaking. And I can't remember if the haikus actually went with his work or not, because it was Hokusai and other people who his work influenced. But there were some pieces where there was artwork that had an accompanying haiku. And I can't remember which came first, the artwork or the haiku. But either way, I liked the sort of companion.